All right, AbsoluteOpinion.com podcast, Saturday, February 28th. This week on Absolute Opinion, we've run some articles, a commentary on counting the casualties of war, a brief look at the history of Barack Obama elections, and finally, the official Absolute Opinion response to his congressional address this Tuesday. And that's what we're going to go over right now on the podcast. In the spirit of true collectivism, it is a synthesized response from not a single person, but three individuals that we've combined into one response on the site. And those individuals were Bobby Pierfrey, an IT professional and real estate investor, Jesse Lytle, an out-of-work landscaping barista working in construction while attending school part-time, and myself, Tim Lytle, a small business owner with a six-month-old and a spouse in the medical field. That's quite the cross-section of the population. Now, since we're all regular writers on AO, it's not really a random cross-section, but indeed it is a cross-section. And the article online right now in Absolute Opinion is our response to the address on Tuesday about the coming economic changes, the coming budget, and the commentary on the stimulus package. So let's just jump into this right now. Bobby, when you took a look at the address, what was the thing that jumped out the most at you, struck you the most when you watched it?
Well, the first thing that jumped out to me, even more than any of the exact issues he discussed, was just how much of the 53-minute speech was just irrelevant. I mean, I guess he had to say it to come across as, you know, I'm with you, I feel your pain, all this stuff, but for the most part, Americans want to hear what his ideas are, at least thinking Americans do. And, you know, it spent too much time just saying, because of all this that happened in the past and because of the country that we are, then such and such is what we need to do. But yet when he gets to that, it seems like there's a gap between what he says we have to do and our past 200 years of existence.
Jesse, same question to you. I know you didn't watch the video, but you read the transcript. What, you know, after reading it, what was the thing that jumped out the most to you that he said?
Well, I like the, he had all these ideas, and it seems like whenever we hear speeches about, you know, we're going to fix everything and everything's getting better, all they say is that, and they don't really say how. So he did go into a little bit of how he wanted to do it with the increasing mass transit and the mass transit, the road crews, and all that stuff, adding more people doing that, to give more jobs out, things like that. You know, he had an idea, a plan, also with the schooling, the education, giving money out only when people would volunteer for community service, things like that. He actually said what his plans were instead of just saying, you know, we're going to do this, we're going to make it better, I have things in the work.
Right, which seemed to be the hallmark of his campaign was a bunch of, you know, don't worry, we have a plan, but not really much of a plan laid out. So at least now we see
exactly
what those plans are.
There's more than just the concept that, you know, he's got everything under control. We now see what he's trying to do and where he's going with everything.
Of course, then the question is, do we think those plans are good? I guess the thing that jumped out the most at me was, as I read over it, it seemed like to fully appreciate the speech, what you had to do was almost have Joe Biden there in a silhouette saying, you are now entering the Obama zone. This is a place where no other idea is considered, where the things that have failed in the past may just work, and where any opposition, you know, isn't treated as a valid idea. You know, you have now entered an Obama speech. Because he goes through things, and it's almost like he's saying, well, this is the only way it'll work. And you look at it and you say, but there's plenty of other ideas. There's plenty of other things that people have tried to do. And the ideas you're proclaiming are ideas that, you know, on the face may sound good, but when we really look at what you're talking about, it seems like they're the ideas that have been tried and failed in the past, and some of them are the ideas that have got us into this mess. But if we suspend all that, then we can say, oh yes, this must be the only way it can work. So that was kind of my idea. Let's talk a little bit, Bobby. You said when you watched the video, it seemed like a lot was taken to say, you know, I understand where the American people are coming from. I understand the problem we're in. The thing I noticed, it seemed like there was a lot of blame, a lot to say, well, you know, we've inherited this, while at the same time at the beginning he says, we don't want to place the blame on anyone. We all have to accept that. What are you guys' thoughts on that, Jess?
Yeah, it's funny, you know, he says, we have all these problems, we don't want to place blames, and then I didn't write this in the article, but somebody did, how it seems every single time he touches on something he wants to fix, he references the problem and the fact that it was in the previous administration. Very, very lightly, not saying George Bush is awful, but he still said it, you know, he was saying how we're not placing blame, but hey, you know what, this really happened then and not now, because we're amazing and they weren't.
Bobby, your thoughts on that?
Oh yeah, he most certainly is placing blame. I mean, I don't know how you can listen to that speech and not. I mean, I have the article here in front of me, and one of the things that annoyed me, and I know you commented on it, Tim, says, now if we're honest with ourselves, we'll admit that for too long we have not always met these responsibilities as a government or as a people. And I look at that and I say, well, I have, and a lot of people I know have. In fact, a good majority of this country has. And you look at that and you say, who is he blaming? Well, obviously, he you know, he's probably going to say he's blaming those who borrowed beyond what they could afford, and you know, government who spent beyond what they took in. And you look at all that and you say, if you're going to place blame, place it where it belongs, not on everybody. Because now you're saying, look, people, you can't handle the way the credit system was set up. You can't handle the way supply and demand works. That's why you need government to come in and say, instead of spending your money on whatever you want, you need to spend it on energy, education, and healthcare. And those might be noble goals. But to say that he's the only one in his administration, and people that think like him are that, is to pretty much destroy, you know, the foundation of American freedom, in my opinion.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting how in the beginning he says, you know, I'm not big government. I don't think big government is the way to go. I disagree with that. That's not how I believe. And the rest of the speech is like, big government, let's do it.
Yeah, especially when he says, you know, I'm not for big government. I know we have a big deficit, but we really need to do something, and this is the only way that we could do it right now. And we'll get to that in a second, just the use of a crisis to push an agenda. I know, Bobby, you've talked about that in some of your previous articles on Absolute Opinion. As a group, our response to the speech is, I would say, on balance, negative. I don't think that's going to be something anybody misses.
I was positive in the middle. I just want to go out and say that.
There were some highlights of positivity, yes. But that's what I'm going to ask. Now, out of the speech, what do you think was the thing that may have been the best, the thing that you may have identified, or maybe even the idea that you think has a chance of working?
I like that as a fact, just like I mentioned this before, but the fact that Barack Obama, if he's going to give help to people going to college, they have to actually do community service first. I don't really know how much community service or whatever, but the fact that he's not just giving away, that's a really good thing, in my opinion, for a liberal to do, because, you know, the poor guy, he's out of work, you know, let's just give him money so he can go to school. He's actually making the guy do something. I think that's kind of cool.
Bobby?
Oh, well, I'll focus for a brief second on the healthcare portion of the speech when he actually went into a little bit more detail. I was looking for the actual quote. He says, already we have done more to advance the cause of healthcare reform in the last 30 days than we have in the last decade. When it was days old, this Congress passed a law to provide and protect health insurance for 11 million American children whose parents work full-time, which, by the way, were probably already covered, but anyway. Mm-hmm. Our recovery plan will invest in electronic health records and new technology that will, and here's the key, reduce errors, bring down costs, ensure privacy, and save lives. And that sounds great in a speech, and I really like that. I really do. And I know you're looking for positive here, but I think information technology is key to that. I really do. I'm glad he's seeing that and not try to fix it with just plain bureaucracy. However, not in this speech, but in other speeches, he has talked about a health czar and someone to look over it. And so basically every time he has a good idea, he says, but we need to tell you how to run, you know, your own life.
Right, like it has elements of good things in it, but when you see the final package, it's a scary thing.
Right.
And I think, you know, I couldn't pull up the research for it, but if I'm not mistaken, the thing he's talking about that has been passed in the last when Congress was only days, I think it's that they passed the CHIP bill, which, if I'm not mistaken, it makes the children that are available for government provided health care the minimum, or I should say maximum income of their parents. Is something that's like unreasonably high. These are not people that are struggling. And I'm also not I may be mistaken, but I think it covers children living at home that are up to 30. It's just a huge amount of spending, and it's just another step towards the government providing the health care for everyone. I think my thought on that is well, first, I guess I should say what I see that I see a positiveness in the speech. And, you know, it's really when you take the whole thing, when you take the whole thing as a whole, there's nothing that I can really highlight as a great positive move. It's scary. It's spending. It's government moving into all these different areas as if it wasn't big enough. But I guess I would have to say, you know, some of the ideas of we need to drive healthcare and the technology behind it. We need to come up with new power, better power. I mean, I'm all for drilling, but I do know someday we need alternate sources of power. That's great. I think the problem that has even with all the good ideas are these are good ideas that private industry should be having. These aren't good ideas that the government should be forcing in private industry. A comment on the healthcare situation. You know, my wife works for, I believe, what Forbes magazine labeled the best hospital work for in the world. You know, as an employee, and I get a little bit of the feeling of that culture of a hospital's culture, and they're for all these things. They're not for making more mistakes. They're not for people being in the hospital longer. You know, they make money by doing their job well. They treat their patients as customers. They know that it's a business, and if they want to be profitable, they want to succeed, if they want to continue being in business, they have to do a good job. And I got to think that they're a better judge of what needs the resources in research and development and you know, changing the way medical documentation is. I got to think that they have a better idea of what's going to make a better impact on the bottom line and the quality of care than the government does. Same thing for energy, same thing for all these things. You know, you can't tell me that there's businesses out there that say, oh, well, this would save us a lot of money, but we're not going to do it now. I just don't think the government's the best judge of that.
Well, energy is a good example of that. I know in IT, for instance, the green movement is big, but it's not because it's being pushed as a social issue. I mean, that might be how it started to some degree. And so I'll be okay with it getting pushed a little bit from the government's point of view. But the reason companies implement it is not because they're forced. It's because they save money. My company that I work for is not going to put in a, quote, green system in our data center just because it makes Al Gore happy. Right? We're gonna do it because it's going to save us an energy cost. And in doing that, okay, we're helping everyone else too. But we're not going to do it if it hurts our business. Companies exist for profit. You know, at least for-profit companies do, and society benefits most when they pursue those goals. And I'm not saying absence of regulation, but you can't start dictating this is what you need to do and this is what you need to make and expect the companies to do as well.
Let's take a look at just the feel of the speech. To me, a lot of the speeches anymore that we hear from now President Barack Obama, they seem like they're talking down to me, like telling me what I didn't know, telling me what I couldn't grasp, leading me along, grabbing me by the hand and saying, come on, you don't understand this, come with me and I'll show you a great and glorious future. Is that just me? Do you guys get that feel, Jess?
No, I would definitely say that's a feeling you get because, you know, Barack Obama is amazing, and we are just Americans. We don't really know much about things.
Bobby?
Well, back to what we said earlier about I feel like he's saying to us collectively that we all failed, and that really irks me. America is not – in fact, as he said in his speech, you know, about that girl that wrote him a letter about, you know, not being quitters – And most Americans aren't quitters. I mean, the ones that work jobs and pay taxes aren't quitters. The ones that are on welfare are the quitters, and most of them. And, you know, I just look at this and I say, we're not the ones sitting back saying, oh, what are we going to do? Okay, the only thing we're looking at government for is to facilitate business by making it easier for us to do business, not harder, by putting rules in and raising taxes and all these other things, but making it easier for us to do business.
Yeah, and on the business topic, I mean, you see, he wants to put cap and trade on power generation, essentially. I mean, other industries too, but power generation, that's going to bring us right to a nation of California where we have rolling blackouts. He wants to remove the corporate tax breaks, which is another way of saying increase taxes on corporations that are moving jobs overseas as a punishment to them. Well, you know what's going to happen if you do that? They're just going to move their whole corporation overseas. I mean, we as America, we should be trying to get corporations to come here by making it, you know, by increasing the incentive to come here, not by punishing them and trying to push them away. And then, you know, I guess, yeah, one of the things that jumped out to me was that collective, you know, we failed. And it seems like time and time again, it irritates me. You know, let me check with you guys. Does it irritate you as much every time you hear him say, America will emerge stronger than before, or America will be ready to lead the world once again? Does that annoy you guys?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's an admission of defeat.
I mean, it's like I never got the memo that said America is no longer leading the world. Especially since we're not leading the world because we don't make batteries.
Yeah, Japan makes better batteries than we do, so obviously we fail.
Yeah, if there's one thing that annoyed me about the speech, it was the anecdotal evidence. You know, a little girl writing a letter, batteries in our hybrid cars, or, you know, certain police officers in Minneapolis, to prove a larger point that may or may not be true. You can't just take one little example. That'd be like me saying, okay, my computer screen here is a little dim, so we have a problem with energy generation in this company, in this country. You know, it may be related, but it may not be related. And when you just say it by itself and people just listen, it comes across like we have a serious problem with the underlying, you know, foundations of America. And do we? I mean, have we not been one of the most successful nations in the history of, you know, mankind?
It makes me think when he says that, that's right, there's another country I'd rather be at right now. I mean, hopefully exactly. America will come back to the place where I'd like to be here, but now I wish I were in. The only problem is there's a big blank there. I mean, who wishes they weren't in America? I'm sure there's those out there. But, I mean, on balance, what Americans go, wow, if only we could be a part of, and then there's some other singular nation that everybody's looking to. Well, here's the next question. Is it really socialism? What do you guys think? We look at his plans. Is it really socialism?
Define socialism.
Well, you know, what we've seen in other countries and in other nations, when we redistribute wealth, when we have the government control our business and industry, and you know, just make sure everything is fair. You know, what do you think?
I mean, his whole approach on the real estate lending institutions, like every single loan, it seems, is going to be scrutinized by the government, and some are going to be like, well, no, you are a bad person, you can't get a loan. Others, well, you just got the raw end of the deal, you can have a loan, but we're going to keep watching it. And it's this total government control.
Is that control. And you know, I guess the question to ask now is, as a nation, is that better than letting the big bad bankers run it? And how many people are going to say, oh yeah, it's better to have the government because they're not making money off of it? And essentially, I'm going to quote Chief of Staff of the new administration, Ron Emanuel, who said, never let a good crisis go to waste. Bobby, your thoughts on the use of this crisis to now move an agenda of socialism? I know this is something that's been a theme of your articles.
Yeah, I basically refer back to his, I believe it was his first speech as president. I remember him saying something about not being ruled by fear. I'm not sure if he referenced, what was it, FDR? He said there's nothing to fear but fear itself, stuff like that. I remember there. He said that somewhere along the line. I don't have it in front of me. But the point was, many people talk and of his administration and or from his administration and people that support him about how Bush, basically scared us into going to war. And, of course, anybody who looks at the actual facts and doesn't believe in a conspiracy looks that we all had the same information. So while we may have been scared into something that we didn't need to be, it wasn't as if it was his fault. But that's, regardless of that point, the point is that he was talking about this is a new era without fear. And then the first thing he does is a month later, he gets up in front and says, if we don't do something now, this is going to turn into, a long-lasting catastrophe. Well, that's fear-mongering. That's exactly what that is. Whether it's, whether it's called for or not, it's not the point. What gets me is the hypocrisy that when you think something's important, fear is okay to use. But when you don't think something's important, then it's just a way to show that the person doesn't know what they're talking about, that they're trying, that there's a red herring or something that they're trying to get across. And, as far as socialism goes, I don't think we're a totally socialist nation. We really aren't. And I know a lot of people say, oh, we're basically socialists now. And there's so many definitions of it. I mean, which one do you use? But basically, it's based on collectivism, but it's not full collectivism because that would be communism. And it does require a large government. So the larger our government gets and the more control they have, the more that we become socialistic. But you can't go 100% the other way. Our founding fathers didn't want us to do that. I mean, for instance, the national defense. You would never privatize that. That's a huge mistake.
Thing in the Constitution that, that's the one big thing that the federal government is supposed to be doing. And so much else is getting new money, and that's the one thing that we're told we should cut back on.
Well, exactly. And another thing, banks. That's a tough one. Depending on who you talk to, banking as a private enterprise can be bad, and banking as a public enterprise can be bad. I don't even know if I have a good solution for that, but put it this way. Credit unions have done quite well, and a lot of people like the way credit unions go, but that is essentially socialistic because it's now, granted, you don't necessarily have the same kind of ruling class per se, but it's basically a bunch of people putting their money together and in a collective sort of way. Now, they all have individual stakes in that, but
right.
It definitely is owned collectively. So, I mean, there's a sense in which, obviously it's a small localized sense, not a national.
Right. I think that's a lot of times where the difference between if you want to call it socialism, the socialism that works and one that doesn't, voluntary.
Right. And among people that are very similar, I mean, look at a church, right? And if you get a bunch of people in a church, and even then it's hard, that are very close in beliefs, there's a better chance that they'll all agree and be able to accomplish a goal than if you get together a random cross-section of the American people and try to get them to agree on, on something in religion. I mean, come on.
Right. All right, now that we took a look at what jumped out at us, the things that we thought were good ideas, certainly a lot of it that we did criticize, what's a better idea? We take a look at the things that were outlined here. What would you say is a better idea for some of the problems that we're facing than maybe what we've been given as a solution in this speech? Jess?
Well, that's an excellent question. better idea? I don't know. I kind of reference this in the article, but kind of his main concern here, I guess, his main point is he doesn't want the children to suffer. He doesn't want us to suffer. And
the next generation with debt and everything.
Yeah, and even us now, he doesn't want us to hang out in this part that we've kind of gotten ourselves into, and whether or not we individually got ourselves into it or a certain group got ourselves into it, I don't know. It always brings me back to the whole, you know, we learn through our mistakes. We don't learn through being helped out by the government or being bailed out in whatever regards. You know, if all that happens is Barack Obama tries to fix this problem and, you know, say he does for whatever, 4 years, 8 years, we're not going to learn anything, right? Nobody's going to – the people that messed up, you know, in whatever area, loaning-wise or anything, aren't going to really learn anything. They're going to just go about doing the same thing. We're still going to have people like Madoff. We're still going to have things like that because we haven't learned any lessons.
Yeah, it's the point, the generosity, the benevolent rich person, you know, however you the parent of the spoiled kid,
yeah.
You know, however you look at it, sometimes helping people, we do it past their need and to their own destruction. Bobby, any thoughts on what might be a better solution to some of the things, to some of the problems that he brings up and his own solutions that he in this speech shows to the American people?
Well, this is part of the problem. You know, I don't want to come out and say there isn't a solution. I mean, obviously, Republicans would come out and say that we need to cut more taxes, and I think there is something to be said about cutting taxes. But to be honest with you, we need to look at what the problem was caused by. You know, President Obama seems to think that all of our problems are caused by not investing in, you know, at least if you look at what his solution is, not investing in energy, not investing in education, and not investing in healthcare, or at least not having it reformed. And I think some of that is true. Even if I did come across somewhat negative, it's more in a, okay, we just spent $800-900 billion. Where's it going to go exactly? I mean, you say all this money is going to go to such and such a cause. For instance, now we're going to provide healthcare or provide college from early childhood, 2-3 years old, all the way up to college. And yeah, I'm just sitting here thinking to myself, all right, but stuff is in place already that if you're a hardworking student, if you do something, if you have a need but you want to go to college, you can still do it. Now, can everyone afford to go to college? Maybe not. But if everyone can go to college, doesn't that bring the level down? Doesn't that include – now, you might get a few extra kids. So my point is, it's not as much that we don't need to do anything money-wise. It's not. I'm not saying that spending is bad, and I think – and I think to some degree I like some of the infrastructure spending. I like some of the ideas of making things more efficient. I definitely like that. And I don't think that's the language that scares Republicans and independents and other people away. I think what it is, it's the amount of money tied to that and the amount of control that goes along with it. So can we just have a smaller spending bill that's made up mostly of tax cuts and then of some key investments in other areas that are meant to fix the problems that exist? Some key regulation areas only where there have been serious problems, like why didn't the SEC catch Madoff or Stanford? Well, let's look at that exact problem and try to prevent that from happening. What about the mortgage crisis, which, you know, comes from bad lending habits, regardless of what they're for? Well, set some lending standards. But don't make it cheaper for everybody to keep their current mortgage. How does that enforce past lending standards? So it's basically, government should just, you know, half itself in size and we should just not have any government control over this. I'm not going to go all libertarian because right now that's not what our country needs and it wouldn't help. It would create a class of people that would probably just move to shanty towns. You know, they're looking for their government to help. Right or wrong, they're looking for their government to help. But it just needs to be more precise and have less fluff. That would be my solution. Cut the bill in half. Make 3/4 of the tax cuts and put the rest into key industries and key oversights that'll tell the American people, look, this is what caused the problem. Here's how we're going to fix the problem.
Yeah, I guess, you know, what better solution I propose would probably echo both of those. I mean, I agree completely with Jesse. Sometimes just let them fail. You know, that's what the free market's about. that teaches you what to do and what not to do. I understand there's big ramifications for that. And then along what you were, the lines of what you were saying, Bobby, at the beginning of the speech, where we said we don't want to talk about who to blame, but I think we need to. I think we need to figure out who to blame. I think the reason why right now people don't want to talk about it is the people to blame are still in power. I don't mean that Barack Obama's to blame. I mean the people to blame are still in power, and that's a lot of Congress who for so long has said, you know, we need to make sure everybody can get a mortgage. We need to make sure that really the mortgage demographics don't make us look like we're racist, when what they just did is they just showed the financial demographics that mirrored in some ways race. And that's, I'm not saying that that's right. That's just the way it was. And it wasn't because mortgage companies were forcing that to be so. It's just the way it was. But for too long, mortgage companies were told you need to make sure you take so many mortgages, so make sure everybody can have the opportunity of having a house. For too long, the companies, you know, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, that are supposed to have government oversight didn't. It's just. I think we need to take some time and look back and say, what exactly did cause this problem? Don't tell us to move on. Let's figure out who is to blame. I'm interested in seeing that. I don't even think it falls a lot at the executive, level. I think it's a lot in the legislature, and it'd be time for them to own up to it. Unfortunately, they seem to never do, and that's why they're still in power. And then, other than that, I think a lot of the ideas may be good, but they need to be pursued by private industry, not government. You know, government's never going to be the best determiner of what is a good move to make in pursuing, you know, the increase of industry or the increase of invention or anything like that. It's going to be private industry because they have the best motivator, profit, success. The government has a motivator that says, well, will it make in our minds things better for people? And that's not an honest motivator. So, I think both of those ideas, in some cases, let them fail so they know not to touch the burner again. And why don't we take a look at really what caused these problems? Would be better than just throwing in the past and saying, but we need to move on, we need to move forward, and we need to do this and this and this. So, all right, we're about at the end of the podcast. Before we go, let's just see, how would you sum up your response? Just a short, quick answer. You've read the speech, you've watched the speech. What would you say would be your summed up response, Bobby?
Well, it's a lot of words to sum up. I don't want to spin it totally negative. So my summed up response is going to be this. You know, you even allude to it, President Obama. You allude to the fact that Americans, you know, there's a lot of ingenuity and a lot of productivity with Americans. So let's make sure that whatever stimulus is happening is being driven by the people. And what I mean by that isn't necessarily that everyone has jobs where they want. Because if you look back in history, you're not going to see that. What I mean is, what do people want? What can people do? What is the market? Because remember, when I'm talking about the market, I'm talking about people, what people buy and sell. All right, let's look at the market. Let's see what's in, what's not. If there's no demand for GM cars, then let GM go down. All right, and give the money, instead of bailing them out, give the money to the people to spend on getting themselves new jobs. If they don't, that's their fault. We need to start rewarding those that are really going to push this country forward. Not everyone in hopes that they will.
Gotcha. Jesse, closing thoughts.
I'm just curious to see what happens. Once he implements all his plans, and, you know, are we going to have just so many jobs that, you know, we need more people, or, you know, what's going to happen? You know, are his plans going to work? And is he going to cut the deficit that much? I mean, that's an awful lot to cut in however many years. I think he said 2 years he's going to cut out, like, $1 billion or something. I mean, okay. I'd just like to see, you know, all he said. Are they going to come true?
Yeah, it is an ambitious goal. I'd say that that I hope in some ways he's good on what he promised us, that he would work with those that that disagree with him, that he'd find out what they have to say, what they desire. We see halfway through the speech, he says he knows there's a lot of different opinions, and we need to come together and discuss it. I hope there is discussion, because from what we've seen in the stimulus package, there wasn't much discussion. There wasn't much crossing the aisle to see what the other party, or even those who didn't think the same way in their own party, thought about it. You know, just as evidenced by the way it was passed, as evidenced by the attitude of those in Congress that are now in the majority party. So if we could be good with that promise, if we could keep that promise, then I think there's a chance that some good can happen. But if it is just using this crisis to push an agenda, to push the ideas that that his party and his own philosophy, his own personal philosophy, to use it to increase his power and increase his influence, I think we're going to be sadly disappointed. Well, if you haven't listened to the address or read the transcript yet, read this article. It's the best way to experience it. And next week on Absolute Opinion, we have a couple articles. A pastor who takes a look at what's missing in the Tuesday address, and a real-life example of when even the best-intended government breaks down. Plus, there's the AR cartoon that we can review, and who knows, maybe another podcast. Until then, this is Tim Lytle. Thank you, Jesse and Bobby, for joining us today, and this has been an AO podcast.